exercise, it's a very personal thing. No two bodies are exactly alike. And then our brain can dictate how hard we think we're exercising. Our personalities may lead us to say something is easy, no matter how hard it may actually be. We're discussing perceived exertion and how to get the most out of our exercise routines. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show. Dan Wanta is an exercise physiologist at UW Health's Sports Medicine Fitness Center. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
And Kate Hemesath is the Aquatic Center Fitness Supervisor, overseeing swim programs, lifeguarding, and pool management at UW Health's Fitness Center. Kate, thanks for being here.
Good morning, thanks.
Well, there are a number of ways we can tell we're exerting ourselves in our workout. I was out jogging yesterday, and I realized at the end when I was trying to motor home, I probably couldn't hold up a conversation with someone. Dan, what are the basic ways we break down exertion and how much we're putting out?
There are a variety of ways of determining how hard you exercise or your exertion, all right? The most basic way is we prescribe exercise based on the first thing we're going to obviously consider is somebody's medical status and staying below pain tolerance, staying in a safe zone, etc. But for the vast majority of us, that's not an issue, and we're going to be working with your exercise intensity based on other parameters. The most common ones are traditionally have been things such as heart rate and target heart rate. But we like to simplify that into something called our perceived exertion scale, all right? And I brought a copy of it, and you probably have seen it before. If you've ever been in an exercise facility, it's on a lot of walls. It's on the back of a lot of brochures, blah, blah, blah. It's a scale between 6 and 20 that basically are numbers from 6 to 20, and there's some words that correspond with those numbers that are basically the answer to the question, how hard do you think you're working, all right? And your scale runs from 6 to 20 with the answers from very, very light to very, very hard. 6 being what you and I are doing right now, just sitting and talking, and that's a 6, all right? 20 being the hardest exercise you've ever done in your life, all right? Mm. Well, some people know what that feels like. Some do not know what that feels like. Kate, being a former competitive runner, certainly knows what that feels like to be at the end of a race, you know, where you literally feel like you can't take another step comfortably. You are at all, really. That's your 20. And however, when we're recommending exercise for general fitness and exercise, we're usually shooting for something in the somewhat hard or in the 12 to 14 area on this scale, all right? So It's not a perfect scale, but it is a very useful tool because it correlates very well to body's physiological responses. In terms of their heart rate, in terms of your blood pressure, in terms of lots of different things.
Kate, we often hear the phrase, no pain, no gain, when it comes to exercising, working out. Is pain a factor in determining whether our workout is effective or not?
You definitely want to push yourself, but I would say if pain is a factor, then you should probably hold back what you're putting into your workout, because you definitely don't want to hurt yourself. I would say you'd have to kind of ask yourself what type of pain it is. So if it's like a hurt so good kind of pain, then it's safe to keep pushing. But if it's something that's more like an orthopedic injury or a different factor, something you haven't felt before, it's safe to just stop.
And you deal with water, aquatics, and I know when I'm swimming, sometimes I can't really gauge perceived exertion because I'm not breathing hard. It doesn't seem as obvious as in running, for instance.
Okay.
Is there something to that?
A lot of times when we have our master's class, we do timed rest. So that's a good way to kind of keep pushing yourself because you'll definitely start getting tired the less rest you give yourself. So it's kind of different than you may still be exerting the same, but if you start cutting back your actual rest time, that can help give you an extra push to your workout.
Yeah. Do you think the scale is helpful to people? What are some other ways that we can understand how much we're exercising?
I'll take that one. There are a variety of other ways. The most common one historically is by measuring your heart rate and you exercise, okay? And traditionally, I've been in this business, unfortunately, for 25 to 28 years. And when I came out of school, heart rate was everything. We prescribed exercise based on your heart rate. And there's still a group of people who do heart rate train, but there are intrinsic errors involved in heart rate training because it's based on a few assumptions that are true or haven't been proven to be true and so forth. For instance, we all have a max heart rate, the highest our heart rate can go, but very few of us truly know what that is. All right. We do know what that is if you happen to have a maximum exercise test done where you were on a treadmill and you've gone to, you couldn't go any further at all. And even that is maybe not so perfect. There are labs historically, I don't believe they were in this country, but I believe they're in the European countries, Scandinavian countries to be specific, where they used to do exercise max tests where they would actually have a net at the end of a treadmill. All right. So that your max wasn't when you thought you were done. The max was when you were off the treadmill into the net, okay?
And collapsing into the net.
Exactly. You know, it's from an exercise physiologist point of view.
It doesn't sound fun.
It doesn't sound fun, but it sounds really intriguing to say, well, really, was there much of a difference between the person who had thrown off the treadmill than the person who voluntarily said, I'm done, all right? And I believe there was a slight difference, but nonetheless, okay? The point of my conversation here is that most of us do not know what our max heart rate is, all right? So because of that, there have been some scientists who've noticed, and I'm going to use that word very strongly here, noticed, that it seemed to be very close to this phantom number, 220 minus your age, okay? And that's all it was, okay? And there have been studies that have compared this noticed phenomenon to what the true max heart rate is, and those studies have pretty much shown that there's a good error between those two numbers, generally around 10%. So if we take that 220 minus your age, and let's take your college age 20-year-old, well, that'd be a max heart rate of 200. The reality is there's a 10% that could be 200 or it could be anywhere different, and then the heart rate would be set up. A training zone would be set up on a percentage of that. So,
pretty mathematical.
Well, it's mathematical, but it sounds technical and it sounds hyper accurate because it's mathematical. But the reality is there is error involved in it. All right. And I started this conversation with talking about a perceived exertion scale, which coincidentally goes from numbers 6 to 20.
Not like 1 to 10.
Not 1 to 10. And there's a reason for that 6 to 20, all right? And that is because if you throw a 0 behind those numbers, 6 being 60 and 20 being 200, it often approximates what somebody's heart rate is kind of very closely.
And really?
For people who aren't on heart rate altering medications and people who, and as people become more skilled at using it, all right? That's why this tool becomes, it seems so simple, but it's such a tool that's very useful.
It's very low tech.
It's low tech, but it's also very reliable and consistent. Yeah, you know, take a frequent exerciser like Kate sitting next to me here. She could very clearly tell you when she's out running on any given run, whether she's at a 13 or at a 14 or at a 15 or at a 16, okay? Because she's a exerciser, and once someone's, and it doesn't take a competitive athlete to be able to accurately identify what they're doing, all right? So, and what she calls a 14 today, she would probably likely call a 14 tomorrow, all right? And so it's a very useful thing. And that's very nice because when there are other extraneous conditions going on, for instance, if it's very hot out or something like that, the same run when it's cool and crisp and nice out may feel easier, but when it's hot and sweaty and humid and kind of ugly out, that might feel like a 14 or a 15, and that's your body telling you to obviously tone it down for yourself.
We're talking about perceived exertion. One way to gauge how hard you are exercising is to use this scale of perceived exertion. The scale takes into account your fitness level. It matches how hard you feel you are working with numbers from 6 to 20. So that means it's a relative scale. The scale starts with no feeling of exertion. Perhaps you're listening to us and not exerting yourself. That rates a 6, and it ends with very, very hard, which rates a 20. We're getting a better understanding of how we perceive exertion this hour with Dan Wanta and Kate Hemesath. Dan is an exercise physiologist at UW Health's Sports Medicine Fitness Center. Kate is the Aquatic Center Fitness Supervisor. You join in 800-642-1234. What exercise do you feel is best for you? How do you perceive your exertion? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Is perceived exertion accurate or meaningful to your training regimen? Even while technology gives us remarkably accurate data about our true workout intensity, there is this scale that seems remarkably low-tech, but it's still in use. The RPE, the Rating of Perceived Exertion Scale. We're learning about it with exercise physiologist Dan Wanta and Aquatic Center Fitness Supervisor Kate Hemesath. Let's gather your questions about how hard you push yourself in exercise. 800-642-1234. What's your favorite exercise or workout plan? What do you enjoy most about exercising? What turns you off about exercising? What challenges do you face? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kate, you're with the Aquatic Center, and how does exercise and water work hand in hand for a productive workout?
Exercise and water, it's definitely different than exercise on land. For instance, swimming, for example, your body positioning is different. You're more horizontal than you are vertical. And with that buoyancy, your heart rate is, in that positioning, your heart rate is going to be a little bit lower to start with than any land exercising that you may be doing. A lot of things that you can change to help your workouts and swimming and your perceived exertion. I know a lot of swimmers, especially beginner swimmers, they have a hard time with controlling their breathing in the water because you're kind of forced to breathe at certain times with your swim strokes for proper form. But as a swimmer gets more conditioned, you can kind of spread out those breaths per stroke, every 3 strokes, every 5, 7, and then 9. And then you can push yourself that way and make your swim workouts more difficult.
So how you control your breath can impact your exertion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
And even with aqua aerobics, you can get a really great workout just with the resistance on the water and the resistance on your body and pushing through kind of with that perceived exertion, paying attention to how hard you're actually working and different movements you can do in the water. We have dumbbells. We have different types of noodles that can help boost your workout in the water as well.
So when you're out running and you're a big runner, do you think about your exertion or is it intuitive? Do you think about the scale at all?
I do think about the scale. Dan mentioned earlier about how other factors play a part with your perceived exertion. I know we had a really hot August, and I'm currently training for the New York City Marathon, and I had gone out for a 5-mile run, and I was probably hitting like 17, and it was very, very hot out. But then I had done my 19-miler when it was, like almost 50, late 48 degrees, and it was probably, it's like triple the distance, but it felt like an 11 compared to the 17 just because of the weather. So I do pay attention to my perceived exertion, especially with distance running when you kind of have to pace yourself for longer bouts of exercise. So you don't want to be hitting like your 15 to 17 the whole entire time. You want to make sure that you save some of that energy throughout.
Let's take a call now. Jabish in Germantown. Go ahead, Jabish.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I do the exercise on a regular basis. Usually I do push-ups, curl-ups, sit-ups, and some yoga. And the timing is like critical. What I do is like I wake up early in the morning and do the exercise. And then before the real traffic hits, I go to the work. So that is the way I keep doing my exercise on a daily basis. And if I do early in the morning, then it gives me like enough energy to go through the entire day. I feel most of the day fresh and no fatigue or tiring experience. So I have one question, like how much exercise is good enough? Because I do at least an hour and a half.
Wow, Jabish does an hour and a half of exercise. It keeps him going throughout the day.
Very impressive.
Yeah, Dan.
Well, that's a great question. How much exercise is enough or ideal? I don't want to be a cop out here and say it depends, but it does depend. It depends on the individual and their needs and their goals and what they're trying to get out of exercise. Most people I work with, I'm really in the clinical end of things, so most people I work for, their purpose for exercise is to maximize their health or to optimize their health, we'll just put it that way, and that is going to depend on what aspect of their health we're trying to optimize or to improve or to work towards, okay? I can quote a lot of recommendations from governing agencies, American College of Sports Medicine, American Heart Association, et cetera, okay? To put it very, very simply, they recommend at least 30 minutes of exercise on most, if not all days. That's what if not all days. Okay, so most of the times, let's be active. Let's be physically active. All right, and what is considered physical activity? Well, that's going to depend. There's vigorous physical activity, and then there is moderate physical activity. And trying to get 150 minutes a week of moderate physical activity is generally recommended as a good goal for everybody to get.
What would be some examples of vigorous physical activity and moderate physical activity?
That's great. Moderate physical activity would be things such as walking, housework, lawn work, things like that. That'd be moderate physical activity. More vigorous physical activity would be, for instance, running or bicycling or rowing or doing other types of equipment that gets your perceived exertion in that possibly to that 14 or higher level, you know, where you would be considering it somewhat hard to hard, okay, in that area. Moderate would be if you're using this physical RPE scale and you were comfortable and you were somewhat skilled at using it, you were used to using it, would be in the 11 to 13 area. You know, that fairly light to somewhat hard.
I always wonder where yoga falls and where weightlifting falls.
Those are excellent questions, all right? And those questions fall in two different area, okay? Fitness consists of more than just aerobic activity. The scale is really most useful in the realm of aerobic or continuous dynamic exercise. All right, that's a type of, you know, trendy and people at work know I hate the word cardio, okay? But and the reason I hate the word cardio is because it implies the heart, which is exactly what that means, all right? But while you do aerobic or dynamic exercise, you're also doing pulmonary exercise, you're also doing metabolic exercise, you're doing endocrinologic exercise, managing your diabetes, managing your ventilatory systems and all sorts of things. So when someone says, when I'm going to do my cardio, I say, okay, when are you going to do your pulmono? When are you going to do your endocrino? When are you going to
muscular skeletal joke.
But
yeah.
It's exactly. But anyway, cardio or cardiovascular exercise is generally considered to be that longer duration, moderate intensity, you know, exercise, which we're all familiar with, but which is the aerobic exercise, whether you're doing aerobics or you're doing something else, okay? And exercise has changed over the course of the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, from more Jekyll and Lane's calisthenics to Jane Fonda aerobics to Michael Phelps swimming to whatever massive triathletes we have now.
You brought images in my head of each one of those.
Yes, and that's
leg warmers.
Exactly right. So now your question, going back to it, where does there are different components of fitness? All right, and aerobic gets a lot of the attention, and rightly should, because there are a lot of the benefits people are shooting for are gained from aerobic exercise. But muscular strength and endurance is another facet of exercise that has a lot of benefits, okay? Not just vanity benefits, okay? How you look or how things fit on you, but also functional benefits, how you can do things. If you're an older adult, it can be, have a huge effects on falls risk. It have a huge effects on quality of life, being able to play with your grandchildren, being able to do other types of things. Lots of benefits, the muscular strength. So therefore, it is recommended that everybody gets that as well, okay? The parameters, the recommendations for the muscular strength exercise is a little bit different from aerobic. We had a brief question about how often should we be doing things. The aerobic exercise or dynamic exercise can be done on most, if not all days, as I mentioned before. You try to accumulate 150 to 200 minutes of it in your week if you can. Muscular strength exercise really should be done 2 to 3 times a week, and it's done in a different with different intensity level than aerobic exercises. And the scale on the scene here may not be as effective for muscular strength exercise.
We're talking about perceived exertion this hour, different exercises, workouts, and the impact on your body as you go through these workouts. 800-642-1234 is the number. How hard do you push yourself in your workouts? Could you do more? How can you tell? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dan Wanta is an exercise physiologist. He's answering questions, as is Kate Hemesath. She is the Aquatic Center Fitness Center Supervisor at UW Health's Fitness Center. And Kate, I want to ask you, there are so many gadgets we can use in our workouts. We've got pedometers. We've got, and I hate to quote the brand name, Fitbits. We have mobile apps. We have apps we can use to gauge our workout. How should we use these? Are they helpful?
Well, Dan and I have kind of been talking about that in, like, the wearables and the technology. I mean, they're definitely great, but those two can also prove not to be the most accurate for everybody. So it kind of depends on what your goals are. If you're specifically during your workout looking for a rating, if you're pushing yourself hard enough, again, this rating of perceived exertion is probably going to be your best bet if you can be 100% honest and true to yourself how hard you're working. But a heart rate monitor, your Fitbit, can be a good guideline and may be good in pairing how you feel. Like if you know your heart rate is A and then look at your perceived exertion scale and, you know, you can be honest with a certain number, maybe you can correlate the two and kind of use those together in a sense instead of just one or the other.
Well, there are people who wear Fitbits, I know, or these tracking pedometer devices and say, oh, I have 200 steps left to take tonight. I need to go get those 200 steps.
Yeah, the 10,000 steps, that's kind of been a big craze. I also teach a couple boot camps, and it's after work from 5 until 6, and there's always a point in class where everybody hits their 10,000 steps at the same time, and they all cheer. And we do so much more in class and burpees and things that are actually getting their heart rate up. So it's a good goal, I think, for a day-to-day goal to hit. Just to, I mean, everybody's different, so it's, you know, based on where you're at and what your your level of ability is. That could be a great goal, but I don't think a 10,000 step should always just be a supplemental workout every day.
The hard and fast rule.
Yep, and especially with perceived exertion too, it's always best to switch up your activities all the time. So if you can also pair that up with some of the wearable technology you use, that'd be a good recommendation as well.
Let's now go to Louise. Go ahead, Louise.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much weight training affects your heart, or how it affects your heart as opposed to running or, you know, the typical aerobic exercise. And if things like the interval training, what does that do to your heart? Does that strengthen it the same way?
It's not the same way, but it does strengthen your heart. Okay, it's beneficial. Strength training is beneficial to your heart, but in different ways. Okay, the best way to give you a hard and fast answer to that would be to say aerobic training or cardiovascular training will be in the long term to have the most benefit to the things, the cardiac adaptations that are beneficial for preventing heart disease or even managing heart disease if you have it, all right? But the strength training will also have effects as well in the remodeling of the myocardium, the heart muscle, and in the preventing of hopefully future issues.
Louise, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Ed in McFarland. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, I was wondering about rhabdo. How do you get it? How do you know you have it versus just sore muscles? And how common is it?
I'm not familiar with what rhabdo is. Are you talking about
rhabdomyolysis?
Yes.
And can you tell us, Ed, what is this?
It's now, see, here's where I'm wondering exactly. I just hear that it's where you work out your muscles a lot, really strenuously, and your kidneys cannot keep up with, or your body getting rid of the lactic acid I'm seeing there. I don't know if that's the correct thing, but it can't repair your muscles fast enough, and then it goes into, I don't know, kind of not like shock, but I've heard people being in the hospital, like getting fluids pumped through them because their kidneys can't keep up with damage done during a strenuous muscle workout.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that phenomenon, that specific diagnosis or the disease, rhabdo. I am familiar with what goes on when somebody exercises, and yes, there is damage to the muscle, which is, it sounds bad, but it isn't bad. You know, there's micro damage to the muscle, and that's specifically what exercise training, specifically strength training, is all about. Okay, and that's why strength training is organized the way it is. You know, I mentioned to you 2 to 3 days a week. That's why we will prescribe strength training on usually an every other day basis. And there's a real reason for that, because we overload the muscle, which means we make it do something it can't do, or it has to fail, frankly, when you're doing it. And that creates micro damage to it, which creates enzymes and other waste products that have to be eliminated. Okay. And it takes a day or two for the muscle to rebuild. Okay, so you know, it's almost sounds oxymoronic, but the real strength training happens on the days off. Okay, that's when the muscle is rebuilding.
We're talking about perceived exertion this hour at 800-642-1234, learning how do you push yourself in your workouts? How do you know you're getting the most out of your workouts? Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back after this news. So
Some people like to gauge their physical exertion with a talk test. You should be able to carry on a conversation while exercising. And if you cannot speak, you're running too fast. But if you can belt out a song, perhaps you need to pick up the pace, push yourself harder. We're learning how to get the most out of our workouts this hour with Dan Wanta and Kate Hemesath. Dan is an exercise physiologist at the UW Health Sports Medicine Fitness Center. And Kate is Aquatic Center Fitness Supervisor at UW Health's Fitness Center, in charge of all the swim programs. We welcome your questions about your workout at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite exercise or workout plan? How do you know that you're getting the most out of it? How do you gauge the effectiveness of your workout? Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dan, I want to make sure that listeners understand, you came in, you're in a wheelchair. Do you find options of exercise activities to be limiting or restricting in your wheelchair?
Yes, there are fewer exercise options for a wheelchair user, and that's just life. This is the way it is. But that doesn't mean I don't exercise. And there's, I do have the luxury of having access to a full fitness center with a lot of different options. And so there are fewer options, but it takes creativity, and it takes sometimes practical issues being resolved for myself. And I've worked with many people who have disabilities of different types, and they, almost always, and it's no different than it is with anybody else, it always comes down to practical issues. So, okay. If people who have disabilities are concerned with the basic issues, how am I going to get into this facility? How am I going to get changed? How am I going to am I going to fit in with the rest of the groups of people? And but that's the same issue everybody has. You or your parents or anybody else who would come into our facility would have those same fears and issues. And the first or second time they're in there, and they realize, they look to the left, they look to the right, and there's two people who are at the same level they are at, and they fit right in always. And so the practical issues are really not the big issues. Kate here sitting next to me works with a neuro adaptive group that is a specific exercise class that's held at our facility for people with all sorts of disabilities. And maybe she wants to speak about some of the people she works with.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I work with a neuro group on Fridays, and there are a lot of people that participate with many different backgrounds. So whether they have MS or have cerebral palsy or an amputee, everybody kind of has their different story. But it's fun because we all are able to work together. They all feel very comfortable in the fitness center. And when we have our aerobic room time, we go through exercises that are going to be most beneficial for them when they're out on their own, or just, functional movements, essentially. So helping them with that is really exciting. And it's fun to see them be excited about exercising and learning new things. It's just kind of working with them to be innovative on using a machine, not necessarily how maybe the creators intended it to use, but you can use it in numerous different ways if you just get creative. If there's a will, there's a way. So, yeah.
Many people just don't feel motivated to work out for a number of reasons, or there's the element of time. People say they're not prioritizing, or they don't have time in their life to exercise. And then there's also this fear of perhaps complicated workouts, or I don't understand how to use this machine. What are some barriers, Dan, to exercise, and how do we get over those barriers?
You mentioned three of them right there. Time is number one, I believe. Okay. And how we get over the time barrier, that's going to be hard. Okay. It's this, you'll hear the same issues with other lifestyle or healthcare issues. We all want to eat better, okay? But eating better requires time, okay? What do you mean by time? Well, it means sometimes shopping for stuff. It means cooking your own meals more. I mean, there's lots of things that are time-related, all right? So lots of health-related behaviors require more time. How do we work time into exercise while solving that? There are numerous strategies, all right? Some are scheduling exercise into your life. Prioritizing, obviously, is something we all could do, all right? But since it's a lifestyle behavior change, not one answer is necessarily going to work for everybody, all right? So that's one barrier, time is, all right? I think another barrier is a fear of getting injured or fear of doing it wrong, all right? And if there's one thing that hopefully we can get across to people is it's kind of hard to do it wrong, okay? Your body will tell you almost all the time it's doing things okay or right and so forth, and sometimes it'll overthink the whole thing. We are human beings. We are not plants, all right? We are supposed to move, okay? And we are healthiest, and I'm going to say, I believe, happiest, too, when we do move, okay? And we need to, and I'm not talking just about the first 18 or 21 years of your life. I'm talking about all 99 or 150 years of your life that you need to be moving, okay? And you should be moving because that'll keep your health the highest, right? And the people will often hear the word exercise and assume that it means well, some of the stuff that we've already referred to today, you know, getting on a piece of equipment, using a strength piece of equipment, getting in a pool, doing, they have certain preconceived notions of what it means to exercise. So I find it very useful to use the word exercise a lot less and use the word physical activity a lot more, all right, and use the word move a whole lot more. To be frank with you, exercise is really a phenomenon only in the last a word, frankly, in the only the last 50 to maybe 100 years at the most, okay? Mm-hmm. There was no need to even discuss exercise because human life was just much more physically active in the earlier portions of life. Now we think about technology and just how our Western culture has evolved to being so simplified that we do not need to move. And again, using the word move very much anymore to flourish.
Let's take a quick call here. Helen in New Glarus joins us. Hi, Helen.
Hello. I have a family history of heart disease, and everybody way back has just dropped dead of a heart attack, usually within a month or two after their first heart attack. What that does is it puts me into sort of a panic mode when I start to try to exercise and get my heart rate up. I get into a panic and I think, oh, you know, this is my time. And that happens when I swim too. Can someone help me? You addressed this fear factor, but I think I know it's irrational. But something in the back of my head said, okay, this is gonna, you know, you're gonna run down the road and they're gonna find you in a pile. So. It really is a barrier. I have an active lifestyle, but I really want to do something that would kind of strengthen my heart at this point. And I'm 75, by the way.
Okay. Well, first of all, I can't tell you to get rid of your fear just by my words is not going to do it. But I hope you can look back and think that you have been successful so far exercising, and you will be. It will be in the long run statistically to your benefit to continue being as active as you can be. All right. Of course you want to monitor yourself. All right. You're going to be very aware of, your symptoms. All right. Specifically your symptoms being the obvious ones, shortness of breath, chest pain. As a female, you want to be especially aware of, pain that it's basically any pain or, discomfort that occurs while you're exercising that wasn't there before you were exercising, that came on while you're exercising. Be aware of that. You're being always in touch with your physician about how you're feeling about that. I assume at your age you've been screened. Your physician's keeping an eye on your on your risk factors, and I'm sure your physician has either performed a stress test on you or monitored you before you, at least regularly if you're at that age group. You
know, not so much. They did some kind of a blood test where they said my cholesterol, statin was recommended. I never had a stress test, and I don't know if that would answer any questions or not.
No, it would not necessarily answer questions. You know, it's a screening tool. The American College of Sports Medicine recommends a stress test for people who have risk factors. And, you know, you mentioned the statin there, and a statin is a medication for cholesterol or lipid management. And that you're implying one risk factor right there. I know a second risk factor is your age. Just because of your age, it puts you in a moderate risk factor, and therefore a stress test is sometimes recommended for a person starting an exercise program. You're not necessarily starting a vigorous exercise program, you're continuing an exercise program. I think the most important thing for you to do is to keep the faith. You know, keep doing what you're doing, monitor yourself, try to keep yourself in that 13-14 range on our RPE scale, which is that somewhat hard, that conversational exercise, and shoot for that 150 to 200 minutes of exercise a week. That's going to be, in your long run, your best bet.
Helen, thanks for calling, and good luck. Kate, what final words would you like to leave with us about the importance of fitness and physical activity?
I would say that it's very important to make it fun, so it's something that you can stick with long term. There are plenty of things to do, especially in Madison. I just moved here recently, but there are so many different things to do, and there's new fitness trends all the time, and I would say go out and try something new. Get with a group of friends, make it fun, because that's the best way to stick to your fitness routine.
Well, Daniel and Kate, thank you both so much for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That was Dan Wanta. He's an exercise physiologist at UW Health's Sports Medicine Fitness Center. And Kate Hemiseth, she's the Aquatic Center Fitness Supervisor, overseeing swim programs, lifeguarding, and pool management at UW Health's Fitness Center. We've been talking about perceived exertion and how to gauge the effectiveness of our workouts. We can continue this conversation over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This hour of The Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer, and she provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.